right. Kung, how you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
Doing all right. Doing all right. So big, big few weeks. What do you think about UFC 229?
UFC 229. I think it was one of the craziest UFC, but it was definitely entertaining. I mean, I think both men are at fault, but who started it? And I think there's more to it. There's the behind the scenes people, right? Who let that happen? Yeah, you know, at the bus stop, you know, Khabib came out and said that he believes 70% that, you know, UFC had, you know, everything to do with, you know, staging what happened with the bus thing. You know, there's so many different news and press out there. You know, we don't know, but, you know, obviously there, you know, what his story is pretty much lines up, you know, pretty solid.
What do you think about the fight?
Conor definitely got dominated and, you know, he couldn't stop the takedown, and that wrestling, you know, wore him down. So his strikes weren't as powerful and as effective as he wanted to be if he was, you know, not, you know, fighting off the takedowns.
Yeah, I mean, now he's angling for a rematch. I don't know how much could change. I don't know how much his wrestling can change from one fight to the next.
You know, I think my style and a lot of the MMA fighters, whether you have a little bit of wrestling and, or you have a little bit of, you know, striking, and you try to all put it together, you know, so wrestling isn't that, you know, the only thing that's used in MMA. There's so many different weapons and different styles that, you know, so many different fighters have in their arsenal. So you have to be a well-rounded fighter. And, you know, for me, I actually did use some wrestling, more wrestling defense and, you know, getting back up to my feet, or me taking someone down, throwing a hip throw, you know. So, yeah, there I got a chance to use everything in MMA except my scissor kicks.
What would you do if you were him? Would you bring in a wrestler to help you take down, to help you defend the takedown, to help you become a better wrestler offensively? What would you do?
I would definitely bring in a high level wrestler, more not to like shoot in on me all the time, but more to let me understand the angles and the different approach a wrestler would use to, you know, set up and go in for a takedown, and then have a better understanding of, like, when you drill with someone at a high level and they transition from one move to another, you're able to switch gears and defend different changeups, you know. But like, if you bring in such a high level wrestler and you're going at him all the time, most of the time he's going to win that battle, and that could affect, you know, the fighter's psyche. So I would use a high-level wrestler in a different way.
Now, you know, you've been around so much, and you know behind-the-scenes stuff. Do you think the UFC bears responsibility for that? I mean, it's a tough line. It's a tough balance to strike. You got to sell the fight, but, you know, if you overcommit, you have these kind of issues.
I couldn't tell you because I wasn't that fly on the wall, or I don't know what happened, but, you know, I feel that, you know, like what Khabib said in 7%, he believes 70% of it is staged by the UFC. You know, how come the bus stopped before it got to the gates? And, you know, it's just different things. And how did a crazy, like, you know, entourage, a Conor entourage get through security? I mean, it's supposed to be what? I mean, there's supposed to be security protecting, you know, the athletes, or, you know, the location. You know, a big group like that couldn't just, you know, rush through. That's what I see. And, that's just my opinion.
Well, Michael Chiesa filed a lawsuit. You know, he sued Conor, he sued Barclays, he sued everybody. He didn't sue the UFC. I'm sure they did something there on the side, but he sued everybody else. Do you support him in that? What do you think?
You know, I'm surprised he didn't sue UFC. I mean, UFC has a lot to do with it, you know. Again, he also, maybe he's smart. He knows that UFC will just bleed him out and just drag out the lawsuit. You know, unless you have a, if you have a really good lawyer, like a team, and the lawyers are doing it like kind of like pro bono, and or, you know, like it's a partnership, and, you know, he's not forking out his own money, then, you know, go out to the UFC. So
what impact do you think this has on the sport in terms of Conor losing? You think it's fatal?
You know, there's a lot of high-profile fighters, and there's a lot of fighters that people enjoy. Of course, Conor being the biggest name out there, you know, I think it actually would help the sport, because now people are going to see what Conor's going to do next. Now, if Conor goes on and loses his next three fights, I definitely believe that's going to really hurt Conor. And, you know, I don't know so much about the sport, because there's always going to be that next, you know, star that's going to be, you know, coming up, or, you know, I mean, there's John Jones is coming back. You know, I hear he sells pretty good amount of pay-per-view, you know, so, you know, we'll see. What, of course, Conor selling the most, but there's other fights to be made, and even though Conor's the biggest name, we'll see what happens. And, you know, Conor still is young enough to make that comeback and then redeem himself.
I mean, I guess that's the problem with running a sports league entirely as an entertainment entity, you know, because you have essentially your biggest star. He's like a mythical figure. He has this mystique around him, and now he loses. And a lot of the people that bought those 2.5 million pay-per-view buys, now they're going to be a bit.
I mean, that's a double-edged knife right there, right? I mean, maybe they might come back to see what Conor's going to do. You know, I mean, already Conor's already lost to, Nate, and the second pay-per-view was higher than the first. So if Conor comes back, you know, that pay-per-view might be higher than this one. You know, if he fights Khabib again, I'm pretty sure it's going to be higher. You know, so if the promotion's about making money, they would promote Nate versus, Conor. You know, obviously Nate's already mentioned that he wouldn't do it. You know, why? Because he beat him both times. But you put enough money in front of someone, they're going to fight. And I think, I believe what I've mentioned before about how UFC is this giant of a company, but they're the giant of a promotion company because of the fighters, not because Dana or Lorenzo, surrounded themselves with, you know, the media on them. They surrounded the media around amazing fighters that puts on fights with their heart and soul. It was Lorenzo and his brother's money, you know, and Dana was just like more of the mouthpiece that got paid a lot and made a lot. So, you know, good for him, you know, having those kind of friends. And in the end, it's what is the product? The product is good fights because there's good fighters. You know, there's no promotion without the fighters. And there's always going to be a promoter stepping up. Like before, Mark Cuban stepped up and tried it. You know, obviously, you know, I think, UFC did all they could do to block, you know?
Well, you know, Lorenzo, he did an interview with ESPN a couple of years ago, and he said, look, there are a lot of companies that came in with a lot more money, like Viacom had a lot more money, and we were just better. We saw things that other people didn't see. We put in our risk, we put in our money when other people didn't want to do that because of the trouble with the commissions.
Well, I mean, back then there was other promotions that was promoting MMA, you know, of course, you know, they got their ideas from other people too. And, you know, they bought into a company that, you know, that started the UFC. So, you know, they're not like, you know, the pioneers. They just came in at the right time and had some great ideas that worked. And I think eventually it was going to happen because, again, like I said, it comes down to the fighters, their personalities, and what they bring into the cage or the octagon, right? So, and, you know, like someone like Scott Coker, it was a matter of time. He knows how to promote kickboxing, and he got into MMA. And, you know, he look at the stable of the fighters that he built. You know, DC is a strike force fighter. Cain Velasquez is a strike force fighter. You know, myself, Jacare, I mean, Misha Tate, Ronda, I mean, all those big personalities, you know, did a lot before they even became a UFC fighters, you know, so, you know, and Scott Coker, he just knows how to promote. And if just imagine if he had the UFC money and had the backing of the UFC, you know, I think he would have done it a lot faster. It's just, it all comes down to who has the most money. And, you know, and Dana and, you know, UFC, they hire on a marketing company. You know, they don't sit around and say, we're going to market it this way, we're going to market it this way. There's a whole bunch of different, you know, elements and different, you know, puzzle pieces that they have to put together. And when they put, you know, everything together right and everything's going on all cylinders, you know, they got lucky with the Ultimate Fighter show that it became a household, you know, like it made everyone more interested in, you know, the UFC brand and the fighters. But again, what's the show about? The show is about a bunch of fighters in the house. Wasn't, you know, that's, it's like I said, it all comes down to your product, and the product is the fighters.
I mean, whether you attribute it to luck or hard work or other things or the fact that they're visionaries, it's good to have competition, all right? Nobody would deny that. You know, now Khabib, you know, he threatened to leave the company. That seems to have been resolved. What do you think it would take for more fighters to do that?
Well, I think fighters can't do that. One, because of their shit contract, their crazy binding contract, and, you know, where the contract has the UFC owning the rights to their likeness, to their, you know, like forever. It's like a ongoing, you know, it doesn't let you out if they want you in, you know, and you know, you just gotta know now that the MMAFA and the Ollie Act is getting closer to being passed. You know, things are changing. You know, Congressman, you know, Mark Bowen put some heat on them, and MMAFA, and, you know, and also, you know, with the help of, you know, some people I was able to get out of my contract, you know, my wife, you know, helped out a lot. She was raised by a lawyer. So, you know, we also, you know, advised, Vanley's manager on certain things that, you know, helped them out, you know. So, you know, I think it's just a matter of time. It just takes fighters to, you know, stand up to the UFC now, because there's other places to go. You know, I think the biggest place now, and as many have said, Bellator treats their fighters better, and all because what Scott Coker has done with their team over there, you know. So,
how close are we to getting the Ali Act to apply to MMA?
Well, if you look at it, when boxing approved the Ali Act, they have 16 sponsors from the Congress and stuff like that. We have over 60. So it's just a matter of time. That's how close we are. You know, now it's just a little bit of a time process and, you know, moving things along through, you know, in Washington.
What do you think the most important part of the Ali Act, as it will be applied to MMA, is it the ranking system? Is it limiting the length of contracts? You know, promoters being able to bid on a fight or on a fighter. What do you think is the most important part?
All the above. What you just said, all that is important. You know, free market, fighter's likeness, the right. If you don't like your promoter, you can sit out for that year. And they don't own your likeness, you know, and they can't just do whatever they want or, you know, whatever they choose to do, you know, and it gives other promotions, you know, that chance to go after the mega fights.
Why would it be more helpful than unions? It seems that unionizing would accomplish the same goal, right? It would give fighters that collective bargaining freedom.
Well, the union is not what is, like, sets the rules, really. The union helps whatever it helps, but it all comes down to the Ali Act. you know, the Ollie Act, everything that a fighter in the boxing game, you know, all the rights that the boxing have through the Ollie Act would be moved to the MMA. And then all the MMA fighters would have the same protection, have the same, you know, free market, you know, to go after the biggest payday and who, and the promoters that's going to, you know, promote them the best. And then, and another thing is the promoters going to have to show them what they've made if they, you know, promote them again and, or made on some of their other promotions. So it's easier for the fighters to negotiate, right? So with UFC, they're never going to tell the fighters, well, hey, we made $20 million on this fight and, you know, we're only going to pay you, you know, $16,000, you know. Now it's going to be a different game because the promoters can say, look, we made this much for this fight, you know, break it down yourself. What do you think you're worth? You know, it just makes things a lot more fair.
Well, when you talk to promoters, boxing promoters, obviously, they say that it hurts the sport, boxing that is, because it limits longevity, right? So the promoters only focus on one fight in particular rather than looking to the sport in years to come.
Well, again, that's what they say because they're not the one getting rich. The fighters are making the money that they deserve. The promoters, they're not getting their face punched in. You know, I don't see Dana or Lorenzo going in there and fighting, you know. You know, so they're the ones sitting back, collecting the money and having the front row seats, you know, to all of them. Yeah, they put the money out and they're getting their money back. But they're not being fair about what they're getting. And they're not being fair to the fighters. You know, and, you know, I believe there's a lot of things that a lot of people don't know that goes behind the scenes. Of course, it's, you know, it's just part of the world, but, you know, just imagine when, you know, when one day something leaks out.
Yeah, I mean, I think that rankings would be a big deal, right? You got a guy like Tony Ferguson who he won the title because, you know, Khabib couldn't fight. Then they took the title away from him. Then he comes back.
That's where the Ollie Act would come in. That's just, yeah. I mean, I can preach about it till I'm blue in the face, but until that act comes through and until the fans and a lot of the fighters step up and get behind this act, then, you know, it's just hurting them.
Well, Bellator's helping a lot. You know, I hear that if you're not a top fighter, meaning if you're not, in, you know, a champion in the UFC or you're making a cut of the pay-per-view, then Bellator will pay you more. How long do you think it is before Bellator gets more of these fighters to come over? They already got a ton.
Well, Bellator's already paying fighters way more than what UFC is compared to what UFC's making, right? So even though UFC's making a lot more through pay-per-view, Bellator is paying the fighters really good money compared to what they're making, right? So they're being fair about it. You know, that's because it's the promoter. You know, so you know, he's a good guy. He knows that without the fighters, there's really no promotion.
Well, and another thing is sponsorships, right? So Bellator lets fighters have their own sponsors. My understanding is that sponsors bring in a lot of the money for these guys.
Yeah, I mean, that is, I tell you this right now, there are some fighters that probably make more in sponsors or could make more in sponsors than fighters that are in the UFC because they're locked in some deal that, you know, only the top guys benefit from.
All right. So Bellator had a tournament recently, implementing some of the things that the Ollie Act would implement, right? Which means that if you win a fight, you move on. If you don't, you drop out. How important do you think that is? Do you think we'll see more of that?
Well, you know, doing the tournament style, I mean, it's exciting. It's something different. It changes the market, you know, and it gives people something to look for, kind of like a playoff scenario. And, you know, it's, like I said, Scott Coker, you know, he's one of those guys that will think out of the box and think of what the fans like, but at the same time, think for the fighters.
So speaking of the best in the world, John Jones is back. He's coming off some time You know, his case may not be the best example, but how could the commission go about protecting fighters before their proceedings are concluded, maybe not releasing preliminary findings? I mean,
like I said, I mean, if you really look at everything that's happening, prime example there, you know, Khabib is getting punished for and fined for, you know, jumping out, you know, out of the octagon, going after one of the trainers in Conor. Conor's throwing a punch at one of Khabib's brothers. I mean, you know, just, I mean, and over here you got John Jones, you know, being able to, you know, kind of get the easy pass on you know, on his cases, you know, and what he's done. It's not like his first offense. So, you know, it's just, there's some crazy favoritism going on. And again, the Ollie Act would not let this happen.
What do you think of the $2 million purse that Khabib earned being held back? What could be done to fix that? Because that's a commission issue, right? That's not a UFC issue.
I hope he gets paid. You know, but man, if he gangster, he tell him, keep my money and take me off the roster if you don't bring back my my brother. And man, that shows like the true martial arts spirit. I was really like a fan of his, but after that I became a bigger fan. So that's like you ride or die with your brothers, you know, and that's very rare. Doesn't happen much.
So what do you think of the John Jones Gustafson fight?
I think that's going to be some fireworks. I think those two, when they matched up, you know, they're going to go pedal to the metal. It's going to be a good fight. It's going to be a good one for the fans.
Yeah, John Jones seems to be one of those stars that can transcend. I mean, you know, you did it with movies. You were in movies with Van Damme, a lot of other famous people. He seems like one of those guys that could transcend the sport. I don't know if he's done it yet entirely, but I think he's one of those guys that could do it.
Yeah, I think hopefully he can just get his, you know, his focus right and not, you know, not step, you know, down that wrong path again. So we'll see.
What about you? Do you have any movies coming up?
Yeah, well, I got a movie out right now. It's called Europe Raiders. It's a big Chinese film. Wong Kar-wai produced and Jingle Ma direct, and this is with Tony Leung. And then I'm working on one of my own projects, and I got my own movie slate now. So I'm just putting things together, one project at a time right now, though. So yeah, some good things down the pipeline for me and the action movie fans out there.
In terms of filmmaking, how different is the American market than the foreign market? I know you're involved in both.
Oh, it's a huge difference. You know, I mean, in the American market, there's the SAG and, you know, everyone, you know, it's like that. It's the union, right? But in Asia, you know, these guys, there's sometimes you work 24 hours straight or even more. It's different. And, you know, I think, you know, there's the American way of making movies, and then there's an Asian way. So it's completely that there's that big difference to East and West, you know?
What was it like acting with Van Damme?
You know, working with Van Damme was super cool. I grew up watching his movies, to have him, you know, part of the movie and saying that he's my co-star was really cool.
You know, it's funny, when I first came to America in the early 90s, I couldn't speak English. And obviously, those movies were some of the only movies you could watch because you didn't have to understand much English to understand the storyline. So, you know, he's a guy that I watched, him and Seagal and Chuck Norris. He's a guy that I watched growing up. I'm sure it was the same for you.
Yeah, from Bloodsport to Lionheart. Yeah, definitely. It was cool to watch that and all of a sudden get to sign a movie with him.
Yeah, all right, Kung. It's been fun. Anything you want to say until we get together next time?
Support the Ollie Act and support the fighters.
Sounds good. Thanks, Kung. Till next time.
Okay. Talk to you soon.